Good morning, everyone. I probably will not have as dramatic of effect as Kenji did when he was praying and the thunder rumbled. That was pretty awesome. I don't know if you guys caught that, but we're going to look at one of my favorite stories both this week and next week. This is a story that we affectionately known as the story of the prodigal son, and we're going to talk about why that title is wrong today and also next week. But this is a great story about a man who had two sons. And one of them gets lost. How many of you have ever gotten lost before? Anybody ever had that experience before? Okay, so we all know what getting lost feels like. I remember as a kid having the experience of getting lost on a few occasions, but there was one circumstance that stands out to me, and it was when I was in high school, I had the chance to drive myself to a youth trip. Now, we've got a youth group here that's a part of. Did any of you drive yourself? None of you. Okay, great. So I got the chance to drive myself to a youth trip. It was awesome. It was up in North Carolina. It was a ski trip. And so the reason I had to drive myself, I'm a little ashamed to say this, was because I had missed too many days of school. And so I had to go up later than the rest of the group. I've had better behavior since then. But then I had missed too much school, so I had to drive up later. And so I'm driving up late, and it was an amazing day. I mean, I felt so free. I felt so responsible. I felt like such an adult. And I am driving up there. It was just a gorgeous day driving through the mountains. I remember that the song Beautiful Day by U2 had just come out, and I was like blasting that on the radio. It was awesome. I mean, it was just a great time. And I get there, and my mom was a chaperone for the trip, and she said, hey, meet us at the lodge where, you know, the ski lodge where everybody's skiing from. And so I go and I meet her there, and she said, okay, do you know where we're staying? I said, yeah, I saw it on the way in. I know exactly how to get there, no big deal. And she said, great, well, just go ahead, you know, get your stuff settled in, and we'll meet you up there later. And so I checked in with the group. Everything was good. They told me where my room was. And so I go to the place where we were staying, except for I didn't go to the place where we were staying. I drove the way I thought I was supposed to go. But you know, like when you're in these ski resort towns, it's pretty obvious where there's lodging and when you're just in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's pretty obvious to figure out the difference between the two. And I found myself driving up this mountain road, and I'm like, this isn't it. This isn't it. Like, I'm sure that this isn't it. I don't see anything that resembles what I think the place we are staying at looks like. I see houses. I see darkness. I see more darkness. It's getting later. It's getting darker. And then all of a sudden, the road that I am driving on completely dead ends. Friends, when you're on the top of a mountain and a road dead ends, there aren't very good options for you, okay? So I'm there at the top of the mountain, and I am frustrated because I thought I knew the way, and I got lost. But apparently, I did not know the way, and I got lost. And so I am there, and I am so frustrated. I put my car into reverse as quickly as I can because there's nowhere to turn around. And so I've got to make a turnaround myself, and I back up real fast. And then the next thing I know is the back wheels go doo-doo. And I look behind me, and I cannot see any road behind me. All I see is the city down below with the lights of the town lighting up the night sky. In most circumstances, this would have been a beautiful sight. In my circumstance, this was a little bit alarming. And I'm sitting there, and I am freaking out. And all of a sudden, I just put it into drive as quick as I can, and I hit the gas as hard as I can, and I never looked back again. Because it was one of those moments where I realized, okay, I tried to take things into my own hands. I tried to handle this on my own. I thought I had the whole thing figured out. But here I was, and I got myself lost, and I almost ran off a cliff. So I ended up getting to where I was supposed to be, and this was the part. I am so ashamed to have to admit this out loud. I had to go back and find my mom and ask for directions. I'm sorry. I mean, it's so embarrassing to share this, even all these years later. It's been over 20 years, but I've healed with time. But we all know what that feeling is like. We all know what that experience is like, to think we know where we are going and to find out that we end up going the wrong way and to have that sense of feeling lost. Now, when we use that word lost in the church sense, we tend to think of it typically as someone who is away from God, who is distant from God. It might be someone who has sin in their life, and because of their sinful lifestyle, they are living their life in such a way that they would be considered not a part of the family of God because they have turned away from God. So we would have the sinners would be a group. There also are people who might just feel distant from God, and they might feel lost because they're not connected to God. It might be because of sin. It might not be because of sin. It might just be that they aren't in a relationship with God, and so they have that distance and they have that separation within their life that can make them feel as though they are lost. And then we also have the challenge that has been going back to the second oldest story in history, and it is the story of our fallen humanity. If you go back to where sin entered into the world, the first story in the Bible is creation, and the second story is the fall of humanity. And the fall of humanity, do you remember what happened in that story? They tried to be like God. They tried to take control themselves. They tried to be in control. And for many of us, the reason that we end up feeling lost, the reason that we end up feeling broken, is because we want to be the God of our own life. We want to be in control, and we don't want someone else to be in control. And in a lot of ways, that's a little, all of those things are going on in this story about the lost son. The story of the lost son is one in which he comes to his father in Luke chapter 15, verses 11 and 12, and he explains to his father that essentially what he's saying is, I no longer want to be your son. I would rather assume that you were dead. And he asked for his share of the inheritance. Now, this in and of itself would have been completely punishable. He could have been beaten and cast out by his father. And it would have been a huge, huge red flag to Jesus's listeners. As they're hearing the story, they're thinking to themselves, oh, this boy's about to get what's coming to him because he has done the absolute worst things that you can do. And so he essentially says that I wish that you were no longer alive, essentially, by saying, give me my share of the inheritance. That was essentially what you were communicating to your father. And he clearly has a separation in his relationship with his father, in which there's a distance there that he no longer wants to be under his authority. He'd rather take things into his own hands, into his own control. He thinks that the life that he could lead on his own would be better than the life that he has in his father's household. And so that kind of sets a story for us. And the question for us as we think about our lives is how do we navigate these things? How do we find our way back home? If we find ourselves lost, if we find ourselves distanced from God, how can we find our way back home to experience the grace and the mercy that we need for our lives? And so we're going to look at this story and explore how, for us, it paints a picture of when we find ourselves far from home, when we find ourselves needing to reconnect, how we make our way back home. So I'm going to pick up in verse 13. It says, not long after that, so this is after he had gone to his father and asked for his share of the inheritance, the younger son got together all he had, set out for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. Now, so here we see that he has gotten what he wanted. He got the gift from his father, which his father didn't have any reason to give him. And he goes and he squanders it in wild living. And so after he has spent everything, there's a severe famine in the whole country, which would have been, to Jesus's hearers, they would have viewed that as a divine judgment upon him. Famines were generally thought of as divine judgments. So it says, after that, he began to be in need. And then verse 15, it says, so he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. So the first thing that we see in this story is he reaches a point of brokenness. He reaches a place of feeling as though he is alone and that he is a kind of a rock bottom place. So when we think about finding our way back home, first thing we do is we see our brokenness. We see where we are broken and where we need to be made whole. And it is in that recognition, in that acknowledgement of how broken we are, that we can start to take the steps to find our way back home. So in this particular case, Jesus, as he's telling this story, he's telling this story to a bunch of people who were Jewish religious leaders. And so they would have been hearing this story, and they would have thought, good, finally Jesus tells a story with a happy ending. The happy ending is the guy who squandered everything winds up living with the pigs. What divine justice? This is great. They're hoping the story ends at this point, because that would be what would be expected. The guy who did what he shouldn't have done, the guy who rebelled against his family, the guy who did what was absolutely forbidden in that culture of turning his back on his father, he is there and he is getting what he deserves. And that is kind of the experience that we have with sin. Sin is something that eventually helps us recognize our brokenness. If we find ourselves in a pattern of sin, if we continually sin in our lives, we will eventually get to a point where we realize that what we have longed for and what we have been seeking in that sinful lifestyle is not fulfilling, that it is a dead end, that it is something that is broken. It is something that cannot fulfill. I know in my own experience that as I have journeyed through life, there have been seasons of my life where I haven't lived as holy as I would like to live, and I find myself seeking pleasure in other places, and I find over and over and over again that it leads to emptiness and brokenness. And so this guy, the son, is there, and he starts to feel that sense of brokenness. He starts to sense, okay, I am at rock bottom. And so here's the incredible turn of what happened. So he says, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants had food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. And here, in this particular passage, what we hear is that he sees his need. He sees that there is a need that he has. He sees that not only is he broken, but he has a need for something to be restored within his life. And so he starts working on this plan of how he's going to go back to his father. Now, here's the incredible thing about this story, that every time I go back to the stories of Jesus, I always find something that I haven't really caught before. When I was growing up, I heard this story over and over and over again taught for people who were far from God, who were living wild and sinful lives. You would hear somebody tell a testimony and they would use the prodigal son story, and they were always the wildest, craziest testimonies of, listen to how sinful of a life I lived, and God redeemed even me. Now, here's the thing that stood out to me as I was reading this story and this particular case. A lot of time, people can go and live lives of sinfulness and have never known God before. They have never known what it feels like to be in the Father's presence. They have never known what it feels like to be loved by God. And they go and they live this sinful life, and they realize that they need to come and turn towards God, but they don't know what that feeling was like originally. Here's the incredible thing about the son who makes this decision. He knows what it's like to be a son of the Father. He knows what it's like to be a part of the family. He knows what it's like, and yet he turned against it anyways. How many of us dismiss the story because we think it's only about those who are wild and reckless and those who never knew God, when in reality, if we're honest, there have been times when we've turned away from the love of God. There have been times when we haven't been faithful to God, even when we know the goodness of God. And so he comes to his senses. And as he comes to his senses, what he comes to his senses with is he's thinking about this, and he's like, even the slaves and the hired servants at my father's house are better off than I am now. I mean, his senses that he comes to are all about, look how good I had it. Why did I turn away from that? Why did I run away from that? And he knows he's lost his part of the inheritance. He knows he's squandered everything. He knows there's no way to get it back. And he's got to go back in humility before his father and beg for a place within the household. And he realizes that I had it so good as a son. I turned away anyways. I'm going to come back to the lowest of places. So he gets together the speech. How many of you have ever put together a speech before going before your parents? I mean, you gotta love it. So he gets up, verse 20, and went to his father. We're just gonna sit with this verse for a minute. This is one of the most incredible verses in all of the Bible. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him, was filled with compassion for him, He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Just look at the verbs. He is still a long way off, okay? The father sees him. The father is filled with compassion. The father runs to him. He throws his arms around him, and he kisses him. Now, there are a few things that are so important to see within this passage. That phrase there for filled with compassion, okay? Filled with compassion, this shows up a few times in Luke's gospel. One is when Jesus sees the desperate nature of the crowds, and he is moved, filled with compassion to care for them because of their deep need. Another is in the story we call the Good Samaritan, the parable of the Good Samaritan, in which the Good Samaritan sees someone in near-death experience, and they are moved with compassion to go and respond to it. And then the third time is here in this story. The Father sees him and is filled with compassion. There's this motif that goes throughout Luke's gospel of seeing a desperate, absolutely incredible need and being filled with compassion and responding to it. And here, it is not Jesus in the crowds. It is not a Samaritan who acts in a good citizenship kind of way. It is a father who sees a son who was lost and is now making his way home. He sees him. He's been watching for him. He's been looking down that road. He has been longing for this day, not knowing if it ever would happen. And he sees him. He's filled with compassion, and then he runs. Jewish guys don't run in this day and age. In this culture, they don't run. But the father doesn't care. The father sees the son that he has been longing to see return, and he runs after him. He throws his arms around him, and he kisses him. And here's the reason why. We get the story over the course of the next few verses of let's throw a party, let's get the fattened calf, let's put a ring on him, let's put the master's robe on him. And this is the reason why. In verse 24, he gives all the reason for why this is happening. He says, "For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And so they began to celebrate. He was dead and is now alive. He was lost and is now found. Now, the incredible thing about this story is what the son said to the father is, "I wish that you were dead. Give me my share of the inheritance." Code word, "I wish that you were dead." Here, the father sees that his son was like being dead, but is actually now alive. He has returned to home, he has been restored, and he is lost and now is found, and so they are going to celebrate. So they are going to celebrate this incredible victory because of what happened. Now, what's the story of the gospel? The story of the gospel is Jesus came, and we turned against him. Through our sin, we put him on a cross. He was as though dead, but what happened? He was dead, and then he was alive, and we celebrate, and we have new life because of that great gift. It is not only a sign of what happens between the Father and the Son, it is a foreshadowing of what is going to happen later in the gospel through the incredible work of Jesus on the cross and being raised from the grave. And it is an invitation to all to see the Father, to see the Father. We see our Father. And here's the thing about this story. This story isn't just about a couple of sons who have different reactions to things. We'll talk about the other son next week. He's going to get his fair due. But here's what I don't want us to miss. This story is all about the Father. This story is all about a Father who loved his Son so much that he, through all of the cultural tendencies, all of the cultural norms, everything out the window because he was so glad to welcome that son home. There's an incredible painting by Rembrandt back from the 1600s. It's called Return of the Prodigal Son, and it's been one that people have meditated on, and this was Rembrandt's kind of interpretation of what it would have looked like for the son to come back and to kneel before the father and to just have that moment of reconciliation. It's a powerful oil canvas painting. But as I look at this, and as you look at it, I want to just invite us to ask the question, what does our return look like? What would it look like for us to be at the feet of our Father? What would it look like for us to be once dead but now alive? Maybe you've experienced that before. Maybe you've been at that place of brokenness and rock bottom. Maybe you've been far away from home. Maybe you have felt distant from God. Maybe you have felt as though you wanted to take control of yourself and be your own God and be in charge of everything on your own. What does it look like for you to come and kneel before the Father and to say, you know what? I was wrong. Everything I tried to do on my own led to nothing but brokenness and emptiness. I need your love. But not only that, not only to see what our response ought to be to God, but to see how incredible the love of the Father is. Now, there's a title I said was wrong about this called The Prodigal Son. The Prodigal Son is the way that this has typically been defined, because prodigal is a word that means wasteful. It means wasteful. So the son was wasteful. He wasted the inheritance. He wasted the money. He wasted his place in the family. He wasted the fortune. He wasted his life. He gave it all away. Here's what I want to say to us today. This is what I see every time I read this story. The real prodigal is the father. The real prodigal is the father, because he is wasting his grace on people who do not deserve it, including every single one of us here in this room. He is pouring out his love. He is pouring out his grace. He is wasting it over and over and over again. He is showing it and with such compassion and mercy. The real prodigal, the real blessing and amazing story within this is not that the son came home, it's that we have a father that forgives. It is not that the son came to his senses. You would have come to your senses too if you started eating pig pods. The amazing thing is that the father looks past all that was broken between them, all the sins that had been committed, all the reasons that the son should have been condemned to death rather than welcomed in. And he says, we're putting all of that aside. We're welcoming him home with a king's welcome. And we are not restoring him to the household as a servant. We are restoring him to the place of being a son. And for some of us, we find ourselves long away from home. And we need to be welcomed back home. I think back in my journey when I was a teenager. That was when I kind of had my moment of surrendering my life to Christ. And I'd been raised in the church. I had done all the right things. I had been an acolyte. I had gone through confirmation. I had said all the right words. I'd even led stuff in front of the church before, even as a kid. But there I was, and I had turned away from God's love. I was more concerned with the approval of the people around me than I was with the approval of God, because they were tangible and I couldn't see God. And so I am wasting my life. I am getting into all of the different vices, and I am just running as far away as I can from God. And then God called me home, and I came broken, realizing that everything I was pouring my life into was leaving me unfulfilled. And then a few years later, again, I'm a Christian now. I'm following Jesus, but I found myself at a place of brokenness again. And it was one of those where I realized that I had poured my life into everything that I possibly could do. I was trying to achieve. I was trying to please God by everything I could do for God without actually knowing God. And I realized that I needed to be restored to a relationship with God, because that was what was most essential, not anything that I could do for God. And even in recent years, I've gone through challenges where I feel restless. And the most profound quote outside of the Bible I think that's ever been uttered was when St. Augustine says, our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you, talking about God. And I found that even in the midst of restlessness and brokenness and all of the despair that I have wrestled with in my life, what keeps tugging at me is a call to return to the Father's love. And so as we journey through this season, we build ourselves up to Easter. We use this season of Lent to reflect, to consider what God might want to speak into our lives. How is God calling you home? What does your painting of the return of the prodigal son need to look like this Lenten season? How do you need to come before God, surrendered, desperately aware of your need and your brokenness and how you need to be made whole? And then how can you see the Father? How can you see the love that he has for each and every one of us? And how can you let that be the guide and the principle that guards your heart and leads you throughout this season? As our team comes back up, we're going to spend a little bit of time closing our service with song. And I just want to invite you to use this final song just as an opportunity just to pray and to say, Lord, what does it look like for me to return? Is there something I need to return from? Or am I living as one who's in the Father's household? If you feel as though you are distant, if you feel as though you are maybe even a long way off, hear the powerful grace that's in this story, that God sees us, God runs for us, and God wants to show his love and acceptance and grace to each and every one of us that will take that step towards home.